I enjoy the 10 o'clock wedding, the 9:30, the 10 o'clock, or something like that, where there's enough of time to do what you need to do without running everybody into 8, 9 o'clock at night in the cleanup. But I would like to stretch the wedding out a lot more than what I see the church shrinking it down. Finally, it used to be an opening message on salvation, a main message on the practical side of marriage and all that. Well, then that gets too long, you know. We're all so in a hurry, you know, and I don't know where the hurry is. But anyway, we bring it down to only one message, and then finally we say, no, not longer than 40 minutes, you know, and we trim that thing down to a half an hour. And that's the way the world has gone, you know, and the evangelical has gone. They're down to about a 15-minute, and they only stand. They don't even sit down and relax in a good message when they've been under so much stress to prepare and all that. I just don't think that is right. Come in, sit down, and relax. And if you have unconverted people here, which often we do, by relatives, then let at least a 15-minute gospel message be preached in an opening. And then let another brother get up and preach the actual wedding message in a practical way with practical admonition and encouragement for that part of it. And if you start at 10 o'clock in the morning, you have plenty of time for that. If you want one in the afternoon at 3 or 2 or 1 o'clock, then yes, I'm sure you're going to get squeezed a little bit. But I would say I'm one that's great for fellowship and interaction. I'll tell you one of the reasons that I don't like the short wedding. Often I find it here and other places. Likewise, visitors come from Ohio and New York and other states, you know. And if I'm not really on the ball, I only get to meet about 10% of them, you know, or 15. And even then, I have to get out of my chair while the rest of people are sitting down and still meet about a half a dozen of them and talk to them. Because at the end of the reception, I mean, everybody wants to clean up and get you out of there and fold the tables and the fellowship is just over, and a half an hour after that, most of the people are out of there except for the workers. I don't think that's the way it ought to be. I think there ought to be a special day, and all that work is going through for the festivities of a wedding and guests coming in from a thousand to hundreds of miles away. I think there ought to be an opportunity to sit down like we did here this afternoon at one table for a while, and you get fellowship with them, and then you move to another table and you fellowship with them. I'd love to see a couple hours of that at the end of the reception, personally. If a few people have to leave, that's fine, but I think we've had, you know, what happens is you're ushered from here right into the reception, you know, and you get your seat. The food is served, you know, and the program is given, and some have no program whatsoever at the reception, and then everything is dismissed, and the people are out the door, and you didn't even get to meet many people except the few that were on the other side of the table of you. Consider that. I know it's hard to change tradition, but if I would have, if I'd be able to, I'd change that one and get more visiting and more fellowship. But may I again emphasize the clear preaching of the truth. Preach against divorce and remarriage. Preach on the permanency of marriage. Preach against fornication and adultery. Preach against sin and worldliness. Preach on the Christian home. Godly children. Bringing up godly children. Those subjects are compatible with weddings. I said this before, and I'll say it again. There was a wedding just a month or so. My sister-in-law got married before my wife and I did. And there were some businessmen there, and he said, there was messages like that. That was a tradition in those days. We had those kind of messages, always an opening. In my wedding, we even had a stranger from Canada showed up the night before, and the preacher called me and wondered if he could have a little time in the middle. He had to have the third little speech and up front, and we said he could and all that. But there was a businessman in the crowd, and he said, How much education did that fellow have? That was up there preaching. And they said, oh, about eighth grade. I know the fellow was from Holmes County, Ohio, who had the message. He said, I have never heard a message like that. And I remember it was the practical sin that he preached against that he never heard anymore. That had him in awe there. So anyway, I believe purity should be upheld. Virginity, purity, hands-off courtship, blessing the couple for their stance in that, and making a mention of it is good. And just uphold the true principles of God that the non-Christian can see what he's missed and what he hasn't had all these years. Vows. Let's talk about vows a little bit. I just have a little practical one to give there. I noticed that some of the vows are quite lengthy, and I truly believe that a lot of them are not true. They're not true. I don't think you want to lie on your wedding vows, but you are lying, some of you. You hear statements there that I will always put your interests ahead of mine. That's not real. If you're lying in bed with 104 fever and you can hardly move till it hurts, you're not going to put your husband's interests ahead of yours. You're simply trying to stay alive, and you want him to serve you in every way and try and make you comfortable and help get your fever down. You know, there's just a lot of things like that that you don't think. When you make a statement that I will always put your interests ahead of mine, you know, or I will always do this or that, you know, let's come down to reality. Let's come down to a practical truth here. And so don't stretch them out. Oh, they sound great. But when you get down the other side and you face the kind of sicknesses that we face at times and trouble in the flesh, the same thing with childbirth. You know that that's the time for your husband to serve. You're not going to serve him in the midst of those things. God has you in a place where you're bringing a soul into the world. Don't try to imagine that it's something very different than that. All right. So I would like to... But anyway, keep your vows short. I think it is very important to mention the fact that you will stay together for better or for worse. For richer or for poor. I don't care how you word that. But word it in such a way that you will stick with this man, you will stick with this woman, whether you prosper in business or whether you have a financial collapse. Whether you happen to have a disease that you're diagnosed with in a couple of years and you have to be in a wheelchair or sick or what have you. You think of those things enough. That you say, my love for this individual is of such that I will commit my life to caring for the other one rather than all the honey stuff that is a bit fluffy. Be honest and realistic. It's a sober time. And God does something from heaven when the vows are given. I thank God for that. I believe that's the way it should be. That we recognize that something supernatural is taking place on that day, and that should bring a real sobriety and yet a real joy and excitement in the wedding. All right, a little bit about dress. That's a difficult one that I hardly know what to say, except I would like to just give you a few principles likewise. Don't make a dress that cannot be worn in other occasions. Use material that is compatible. I don't care if it's new. I don't care if it's nice. But I think it ought to be worn in other occasions. It's not right that you make all these clothing. I just heard about some of these young girls that have been in the bridal party for so many of their friends and how many dresses they have in their closets that came about just because of going to weddings, and it gets a little expensive for Dad to continue to do that, you know. And I say, okay, if you want to wear once your bridesmaids and attendants maybe to wear new clothing or a certain color, but let it be of a color, of a material, and made in a way that it can be worn for any Sunday morning service. And including the wedding dress. Let it be made in such a way that it can be worn for couples' nights, anniversaries, special times, special dates, or whatever, and something of that nature to bring the memories back of the wedding day and not something that is tucked away for life and never can be worn again. And, of course, there's so much to be said about many other parts. The veil. I believe the normal prayer veil or the covering that you're wearing now, once again, it can be new, it can be special, but that's all that's needed. I do not believe we should go to the worldly bridal veil, which is so transparent that it's almost worthless anyhow, just a symbol, I would say, that has come from the world. I believe the prayer covering is sufficient for the veil that is worn at a wedding. Let me again stress modesty in here, where again I would like to say that that is a standard that has fallen so out of order in many of the Christian churches, but everything should be of modest apparel according to the Word of God in 1 Peter 3. Let us remember that these principles are true for wedding, likewise they are for all of life. 1 Peter 3:3, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair, of the wearing of gold, or the putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. The ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, like Sister Anna Joy gave testimony there this morning of the change that came about. She lost her independence, and on her wedding day when she sat up there and in Bedford at that wedding, I remember the day, I believe that something was really had changed in her life while she was in Haiti. I remember well how she was able to climb those hills like a man and nurture all the sick people there in the mountains of Haiti. But now came the day to put on the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. And God says that is of great price. I don't remember to this day what her dress was like, but I do remember the change in the Anna Joy Kaufman that I had known of the past years. And I believe as a single girl, she had the right to be more aggressive there and go out there and minister to the people. But when it came time to be a wife, you put on that ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. And that is beautiful. That is the beauty that so enhances the wedding, that so inspires it, that brings such an anointing of it. You know that girl will do him good and not evil all the rest of his days. You know, when girls prepare themselves in that way rather than to try to hang it on the outside and impress people by jewelry or by fancy clothing. But one of the big things that is such a grief is the modesty issue in our day. You know, there are so many weddings that are hardly fit to attend in the church, all the spaghetti clothing or now even the totally bare shoulder, you know, without proper covering, or spaghetti strap clothing is what I mean, by the bridesmaids and so on. I believe that is totally out of order. To come to a wedding and expect to see a couple being joined together in holy matrimony and you don't know what to do with your eyes, you're constantly distracted by flesh and by the display of immodesty. That is so far out of order. You know, I don't know what you people do with all that, but as far as we're concerned, it matters to us whether we go or not. And I recommend the same for you. You make your choices to whether you go, and don't again let relationships, earthly relationships, rule you, but make your decisions. not extravagant or competitive. We find there again for the wedding dress, or, well, it has to have buttons a half an inch apart the whole way down the back. I've always dreamt that that's the way I want it, you know. You have those kind of things that surface at a time like that, or just something else. Oh, that's too mundane. Others have done that. I want something different. And so patterns are changed and stretched, and again, surprises are given, because often the wedding dress is not seen by the public or very much of the church. But I would to God that we as elders never have to ask to see it. But I believe there are times when it would be better off that we would, and give some guidance on it, just perhaps due to the weakness in that family, or the parents not having the judgment or discernment on it. Photography. Let me say a little bit about photography. Another extremely drifting situation in our time, in our culture, in the churches in general. It has gone from 40 years ago in the churches that I was married in, for a few pictures to be taken, and most of them were outside the church house up against with some bushes or something like that in a nice place in the sunshine. Some pictures were taken at a specific place, but never a flash in the church, and no photographer gyrating all over the place, front to back, side, and every which way, taking the pictures during the service. That was considered a full distraction to a godly service and was not allowed. Well, here we are, and we've come the whole way where one isn't enough. We have to have two. And you talk about a few pictures being taken. We are now taking hundreds and building huge volumes. How can you justify the whole matter of pride and the showiness of that as you then show it off to everybody? You show yourself off as a couple to everybody who comes to visit you. Think about those things. But I would like to see, it would be my desire to take pictures very discreetly without flash during the service by one person. That would be my desire, to see it go that direction. And the reception likewise. And then a time being made at the end of the reception in front of the fireplace here or somewhere like that outside, and then let everyone take their picture if they care to. But for the photographer and 35, 40 others to be constantly flashing throughout the reception and even in the church, just standing up in the bench and taking pictures, I believe is out of order for a godly wedding and a godly worship service. And the one who does it, I think, should keep himself or herself very obscure, very discreet, and, like I say, using time exposure, not flash. All right. Many, many more things that I'm sure I've missed or could have been spoken on. But I'd like to speak a little bit about the reception. Like I mentioned before, I believe the reception is a time of festivity. It is a time of feasting. I believe God does allow a feast to be held by the church. I think it's okay to have a full course meal. I don't think that's extravagant. I think that can be normal. But I would also say, if the budget does not allow it, then it's fine to have a lesser meal. However, traditionally I would say to have just a few crackers and some pretzels or cheese or what have you. It doesn't seem to me like a time of great joyful festivity together as a group. I would encourage something more than that. But the main part, it to be visitation and fellowship, a time of sharing poems and songs and spiritual contribution being made to the couple, giving encouragement to their life, giving them practical accounts and stories of how they can improve and how they can build their marriage, and Also, I think it's a good time to bless a couple for their past faithfulness. I've seen very touching receptions recently in the last year, I believe it was, that individuals got up and complimented the service or the service of a sister or of a brother, the unselfishness, the going into other homes and ministering to other moms. And some of those compliments were given throughout the reception at the microphone. Very touching, very blessed. I don't believe it's a time for a lot of foolishness and frivolity, but rather I have shed many tears at receptions because of the sincerity and the beauty and the blessing and the joy. It was in sincerity and an honor given to the couple, and yet many smiles, and even we were able to laugh about a few things that were mentioned and things that happened. But it's not a time to save the worst embarrassing moment in the couple's life to expose at their wedding day. I find a lot of people say, I'm going to save that for your wedding day, and I'm going to get up and tell everybody what you did and how you stumbled and made a big mistake that day, and we just try to embarrass you and make you blush and get red-faced over the whole thing. I think that's out of order. It's out of order. And I see it happen so many places these days. It's a time for good, clean humor, I believe. I don't think it has to be overly sober. I think the messages should be practical and very short at a reception. Just words of encouragement, words of blessing, words of honor, words of advice, and so on. I think poetry is very, very good at receptions, to quote or write special poems for the couple. Very, very edifying, and very, you just come away just feeling so warmed and overwhelmed and blessed when you come away from a wedding like that. And I have seen it over and over again. Family sharing, also a good thing for the whole families to get up with all of their children. The older children speak a few words of blessing to a sister or brother that's getting married, and then they sing a song, give a poem, or something of that nature. And just a few other closing things that I would like to give, and then I'll open it up perhaps for some of the things I've missed. I would say never allow any pranks to be pulled. It is my conviction, and has been for many years, that the young man should be able to park his car outside the building here, and nobody would ever think of touching it. That's the way I think godly weddings should be. And I'd like to give you this warning. Don't ever tempt us to catch you doing those things. You may not be so happy with the outcome of that. But I just believe it is so out of order to try to do things to the car to make it mean or miserable for the couple as they start their wedded life, and to just torment them and try to get in their suitcase and play jokes on them and put shaving cream on the car and balloons and tin cans and what have you. I think that is all totally of the world and out of order for a godly wedding. May that never be the case here. Car decorations, same way. Wedding trips. I believe it is recommendable in a godly wedding. There has been a lot of stress and a lot of pressure that especially the early days of a wedding trip should be that to find a quiet place and just be able to unwind, get to know each other in a deeper way than you have before, and not be pressed again for a high expectation, long trips, or things like that. Rather find yourself a quiet place, a cabin in the woods, or a private apartment, or maybe even your own home. I think those things are in godly order. And again, the influence of the world is so great there. We hear of Caribbean cruises, Hawaii flights to Hawaii, modern beaches full of nakedness, and ungodliness, I don't believe that's compatible with the godly wedding, with the Christian church. Those things are the, and the money that is spent, I would think in 5 years you would find 100 ways to spend that money to a better cause than for a fleeting honeymoon trip to an exotic place in the world and enjoy that for, like I say, a fleeting few days, and the money is gone once and forever. Amen. All right. At this time, I would just like to open it up. Perhaps there are some questions. I did have one that was given to me that I'll just give at this time. Why does it seem like more and more young people marry later in life, like 25 to 30, instead of the younger 20 to 25? Is it because of the worldly influence that the world has concerning freedom, enjoying your freedom, you're only single once? I'm not sure what all the reasons are there. Or is it, he writes here, because of doing mission work, or is it because young men love their single life too much? And that's a right question. Brother Rick and I just discussed that some time ago, maybe with Brother David. It would still be my encouragement, and likewise, we felt united in that we encourage marriage where possible in the younger years, 20 to 25. Or 21, I should say, 22 to 25. Reason being, I believe you are more flexible when you're young than you are when you're 30, 32, 33, 35 years of age. And we find that there's just the compatibility and the working out. We are just more flexible. When you pass from father's authority right into husband's authority, that all seems to take place much smoother in the younger years. However, I must also say, some of you young people can't help it if nobody comes around till you are 25 or 30. And so that's not your fault. I'm sure that many of you would have desired it to take place at a younger time, but the right one didn't come until later, and that's understandable. But I would just like to comment, I think the ideal times of full bodily maturity is all in place usually, and mental, spiritual maturity should be in place. Sometimes due to conversion being so late, 19, 20, 21, they are not ready for marriage for a number of years for those reasons. We've run into that a lot in Manitoba, not having a clear conversion until 19, 20, 21 years of life, you know, of age, and then the whole Christian maturity was out ahead of them, that they had to take time to learn many things and understand what a Christian home is all about when they didn't come from one, and that took some years. So that's some of the reasons I believe that the age was later in some of our churches. But maybe there are other thoughts that someone would have there. But I would favor the younger there rather than the later years. The other reason is because of the childbearing years ending usually in the early 40s. I do believe that it's normal and good if a woman has more than 10 years of childbearing years. All right, other questions someone might have on Christian wedding. What did I miss? I'm sure that you can find some things, or what needs do you need to add? All right, Brother Dean over here.
It was 14 years ago this year that you had the message, had this message on the godly wedding, and it was a memorable time for my wife and I, because we were courting at that time and didn't know. I mean, I didn't have any much of a frame of reference as to what to do after we were married, other than, you know, everyone that I had known and seen, sort of, you know, it was just, you know, you travel to the West Coast or, you know, just spend a lot of money type thing.
Yeah.
For a couple weeks there, and I didn't have a vision for doing that, but I didn't have a vision for, you know, what I was supposed to do. So
right.
When you had that message and you expounded a little more there on the honeymoon time and going, getting a cabin and spending some time in a cabin, we just look back on that now 14 years later with very fond memories and are so thankful for that message, because that is what put the vision in our hearts for just being away at a cabin for a week or so. And my wife has said to me many times she'd like to live that week over again, you know, rather than the rat race of traveling and seeing things and, you know, whatever people do on their honeymoon. It's a wonderful time to get to know each other, build a right foundation, to just go and be alone. You don't have to be seeing the world and being involved in all kinds of exotic trips during your honeymoon.
Yeah, we had spent some time in northern Pennsylvania in ours, and we had no idea how much tension was built up in all the hustle and bustle of getting ready for the wedding and getting ready to leave home and pack everything. And we were heading for Ohio for our government service, 1W service, right afterward. We got to that cabin over there. We laughed and cried and just unwound, you know, from the pressures of the day. And it was one of the highlights of our trip. We slept out on the porch, and I remember animals would walk by during the night, you know. But it was just a complete relaxed setting, and we look back very favorable on those days likewise, and probably would have needed to redo it. Yes, brother.
Okay. Brother Mose, you didn't cover how these weddings would be paid for. Do you have any practical suggestions for us fathers who would be paying for weddings? I know there tends to be a tendency in America today for people to go thousands and thousands of dollars into debt to pay for a wedding. Would you offer some practical suggestions to those of us sitting here today?
Yeah. How the weddings would be paid for? Yeah, so I think in general, especially if the girl has served in the home all those years faithfully through her teenage years, I believe the parents should make the wedding. That's the traditional way here in the United States, or especially here in Lancaster County. If they cannot afford that wedding, then I think the young man, being a wage earner already some years, should consider helping. And finally, if it is a real difficult situation like we have with the parents being on a colony in South Dakota or not having any money because they're in a situation like that, both sides even in some cases, then I think it's good for those of us brethren who can to help the situation, or even the church collectively, to give them a nice wedding. First, the wife's parents' responsibility, then the groom should help, I believe, if necessary, especially if he's independent, self-sufficient for some years, and then finally, brothers or the church, I think, would be compatible there. Right here, Roger.
You had mentioned earlier that oftentimes young men hang back about getting involved in the wedding plans, you know, they just want the wife, and you take, he doesn't mind how. Should that be that way, or should young men feel more responsibility there?
I think they should. Really, I believe I don't know how to say this either, but for me, we had nothing in the wedding plans, especially not the reception or the... How the wedding ran had nothing to do with us. The parents made the wedding. And that's just the way it was for everyone. But can you imagine? I can't explain to you young people what a relief that was for me. I just went there and got a wife and didn't have to care about any of that stuff. We didn't have one major planning meeting. My father-in-law came to me, future father-in-law, and said, "Is there any special friend that you would like to invite?" And I told him yes, and he granted that invitation, and that was for one couple, and that was a little small, but we were crammed into a church basement reception area that held 220 people. And we both came from large families, 9 on my side, children, siblings, and 13 on my wife's. And then the extended family, uncles and aunts, were all to be invited. But I'm saying we didn't have that option. And I look back and I'm kind of glad I didn't have to wade through all that stuff, you know, deciding those things. But so I like the idea that a spiritual and natural authority takes most of the brunt of that. I don't think a bride should be planning her meal. I think the bride's mother, who is a experienced cook especially, and other individuals perhaps should just say, "Well, all right, we'd like to have hamburger and potatoes and noodles and peas or what have you, and that's it. Give it to the other. Let them go with it. Instead of you bogging down, now how much do I need? And you're getting ready to get married. And you want to think about all the other things of life. Let somebody else do that," I would say. That's just a practical one on my part, but like I say, I was glad for that. But if not, if the bride does have her fingers into everything like that, then she better have the bridegroom to be also involved, because there should be a good spiritual authority there. It's not right to have a gap there where the bride just gets to do everything the way she wants to and nobody stops her. Yeah, again, if you have weak parents, that's what happens. The bride runs the whole show. And parents, don't be weak like that. All right, someone else? All right, well, thank you for your time. I'll turn the time over to Brother David, and then I'll let him give the order for the baptism.
God bless you for listening to the preaching of His Word. You may leave us a message by pressing 99. To hear information about our Saturday morning Bible study, press 88. To find out how to listen to a church service at Ephrata Christian Fellowship, press 77. To hear the menu for this topic again, please stay on the line. To listen to any other message in this topic, press the appropriate extension number now.